Good afternoon. I'm Claire Bamborough from the University of Durham in England, and this is a presentation that I've prepared with my colleague Jason Beckfield from the University of Harvard. First of all, I'd just like to thank Nancy and Catherine and the Spirit of 1848 Caucus for giving Jason and I the opportunity to present what is very much work in progress for us. This work originated, Jason and I were asked to prepare a research report for the National Academy of Sciences here in the US because they were looking at international mortality differences. And our aim in that report and in this presentation is to explore how political trends, long-term life course political trends, are associated with long-term mortality trends in rich democracies. This is just to say that I have no commercial relationships and I think unlikely to ever have any. So what is the US mortality disadvantage? And forgive me if you already know this, but if we look at this slide here, we can see that the life expectancy rankings internationally for countries in 1970, and then we can compare them for 2010. And we can see in 1970 that the Scandinavian countries had the highest life expectancy in the world. And we can see that the US was ranked at number 15. And the gap there is about 3.8 years between Sweden at the top and the US at 15. If we roll forward to 2010, we can see that Japan has replaced the Scandinavian countries at the top of the table, although they are still doing well. The US, however, has dropped in relative rank terms to number 25, and the gap between the US at 25 and Japan at the top has increased to just over 4 years. We can also see a similar pattern in terms of infant mortality rates. So again, in the 1970s, the Nordic countries were top of the rankings, and the US was at number 16. And we can see that for Sweden, infant mortality rates were almost half that of the US at this point in time. If we look in 2010, obviously there's been massive improvements in infant mortality rates in all countries in the West, but we can see that the US is still exhibiting a strong disadvantage and has in fact again fallen down the rankings to be number 29. And if we compare the US to Iceland, we can see that there's around a threefold difference. So, you know, the US could potentially achieve the health outcomes there of Iceland, but, you know, why isn't it managing this? So why does the US diverge? Well, there was a National Research Council report last year, and this was looking at this question. And, you know, it might surprise this group that they weren't really particularly very interested in some of the political and economic explanations. And they instead blamed high rates of smoking in the US in the 1950s and 60s, and they particularly focused on the role of lung cancer mortality in the US over the past decade. The report was somewhat dismissive of the role of obesity, although they said that it would probably drive future US health mortality disadvantage. And what I found particularly surprising as a Brit was that they dismissed the role of your healthcare system, saying it wasn't very important because you had Medicare in 1965. The report that Jason and I submitted evidence to will come out later this year. I've told it will come out after the election. I don't know whether that means it actually will or not. I believe that from some of the other evidence that's been submitted, this might take a similarly behavioural perspective and miss out on the political and economic explanations, which I would like to focus on. One interesting thing that did come out of the National Research Council report, however, was that they focused very much on the role of female life expectancy and female premature mortality in driving the overall drop for the USA. And we think that this could be particularly important because the focus was on women who were born in the late 1920s through to the early 1940s. And of course, these women would have entered the labour market and had most of their adult and working lives from about 1960, 1965 onwards. And this was also a period where in the US, the market liberal discipline of the labour market took hold and accelerated. So there was an increasingly less regulated, less coordinated, a more commodifying labour market, which would have led to more stressful working conditions, higher poverty rates, and so on. So we want to talk about the role of politics in explaining this US mortality disadvantage. Looking across comparative health research and looking at research in Europe in particular, there's a growing body of evidence that looks at the role of welfare states and how different types of welfare state lead to better or worse health outcomes. In terms of welfare states, we can divide countries. For example, the Scandinavian countries tend to be social democratic in how they organise their welfare states. So if you're out of work and unemployed, for example, you get quite high levels of benefit. Most people are entitled to those benefits and you're allowed to claim them for a long period of time. A second type of welfare system would be what's called the conservative system, and that tends to dominate in continental Europe. And here benefits can be reasonably high, but they tend to be very much related to your previous earnings. And there's a lot of reliance on the family and the charitable sections of society as opposed to the state in terms of providing access to services. The third world of welfare is called the liberal system, and that's where the USA would be sat alongside countries like my own, the UK. Here, benefits tend to be a lot more stigmatised and means-tested, have a lower value, and in the sort of phraseology that we would use in sociology, we would say that they're less decommodifying. It means that your health, your opportunities in life are much more dependent on your market position, so it's potentially important for inequalities as well as for overall population health. There's been very little research, though, into the role of politics, political systems, political changes. This has been noted by Nancy Krieger and Jason Beckfield in some of their previous work. One of the exceptions would be some work by Nancy Krieger's team that looked at the trends in premature mortality in the USA, and they found that this tended to follow political changes with a U-shape in terms of inequalities decreasing over the 1960s and 1970s following the expansion of welfare after the war on poverty, and then increasing again after the Reagan and into the Bush period. So we want to see whether there are similar trends when we look at a macro international comparison. So building on this research, we have two questions. The first one is, do mortality trends in countries tend to vary by these different types of welfare, from generous to more meagre? And if so, are these changes then associated with international mortality trends? And I suppose our argument is that these different welfare states are very important ways of structuring the rest of society and the state in terms of labour market regulation, levels of decommodification, poverty, social cohesion, healthcare, etc. We draw on a few different data sets here. The OECD health data, which we use for life expectancy and infant mortality. We use the comparative political data set by Armingen and colleagues, and we also use the decommodification index from Scruggs and Allen. So here in this first chart, we can see social democratic life expectancy from 1960 through to a couple of years ago. And we can see that there's a general trend towards an increase here. And interesting for our argument, of course, is the rapid increase in life expectancy in Finland from the 1970s onwards, which was accompanied by a rapid increase in the size of their welfare state as well. And we can see here that all the countries are tending to do well. Again, quite a lot of similarity in terms of the conservatives. These are the continental European countries. But we begin to notice some changes here. These are the liberal countries. We can see the likes of the UK, Canada, and Australia all at the kind of top of the pack. So they're showing the same sort of increase. But if you can see at the bottom, the one that's kind of drawing away from the pack is the USA. We can see there the clear trend away from the other liberal countries. A similar pattern, although slightly more nuanced, can be seen in terms of the infant mortality rate. So the US is beginning to dip below the other liberal countries. So it's not just that the US is doing badly internationally per se, it's also doing badly compared to the countries that you would expect to be most similar to it. In this second slide, I want to look at some of the political changes that have happened over time in these different welfare states. So here we have the social democratic countries, and we can see on the top, this shows the balance overall between left and right holding executive power, so holding the presidency or the prime ministerial offices and cabinet offices, for example. This shows largely a left-wing dominance in the social democratic countries, with the exception of Denmark at the bottom, that took a rather rightward turn from the 1990s onwards. In the conservative regime, we can see it's slightly more mixed, and perhaps most prominent is the clear decline of the left in Germany. We can see that the trend there slightly downwards and towards the right. We can also see that Austria has quite a dominant of the right in that section. The liberal countries, we can see quite a lot of variety here, less consistent with one another, but we can also see that there's a growing trend of right over left, and that's particularly the case for Ireland and the United States if we look towards the bottom right of the diagram. So the USA is the dash and the dot, and Ireland is just the dot. So we can see a clear movement more towards the right in these countries even than in the other liberal countries. So if political control of government could be seen as the input, then I think decommodification could be argued to be one of the outputs. And we can see here the trend in terms of decommodification, so the extent to which people can maintain a life and a standard of living independent of their market position. And we can see here in the social democratic regime that there's a sort of growing decommodification in the 1970s, particularly if we take Sweden at the top there, going very high. And then there's a stability overall through until more recent times. Sweden is a bit of an exception here in that they go very high, and then there's a rapid decrease in decommodification in the early 1990s. And that accompanied a very severe recession in that country and a lot of welfare state cuts in the early 90s onwards. In the conservative countries, we can see that there's a lot of stability around decommodification here, with the exception of Switzerland, where there's been a big kind of drop in recent years. Moving on to the US, we can see here the USA is along the bottom, and just above it there is Australia. So, somewhat surprisingly, not much change actually in the decommodification levels of the US over time. However, it's probably worth pointing out that it might be quite hard to get lower internationally when you're starting off at such a low base. The scale changed, but if you think there you're starting at 15, Sweden was at 40. Okay, so there's stability, but stability at a very low level. I think another way of looking at it, and this is some data that Jason calculated himself and brings in more of the life course issue, is to think that these are static representations in the previous slides of what decommodification is in any country at any point in time. It doesn't show how that might accumulate over someone's life course. So looking back on the National Research Council's report, where they found that one of the drivers for US disadvantage was particularly amongst the premature mortality for women, particularly women born from the 1920s to the 1940s, then we can think over their working life, how did the welfare state change for them, and how much of their life was dependent on the market. So how commodified were they, and how did this accumulate over time? So what Jason's done here is calculate a cumulative commodification index. And this is based on the fact that decommodification is calculated across three different areas of the welfare state: sickness absence benefits, unemployment benefits, and pensions. And the maximum score in this kind of model that any country could get would be 51. the US in 1970 was scoring 17 out of 51. So we could turn it round and we could say that the commodification is 34, the decommodification is 17. So if you're in year 2000, then you've experienced 34 as a commodification, maybe 36, etc. And this is added up over that time period to show how in the US people's livelihoods have become increasingly commodified and more dependent on the market. And we can see very strongly here that whilst there's a trend for all of the six countries representing different types of welfare state, the US started ahead and has maintained and stretched its lead in terms of being the most market-based system. So for our woman who was born in the 1940s, this level of commodification that they experienced in the US was very different, let's say, from that experienced in France or Germany. So just to conclude, we find in this data that welfare states tend to trend differently by their regimes. So over time, decommodification and life expectancy trends are different depending on where you live. And it's clear from this that the US is the most liberalised welfare state. And we think that there's good evidence here that this is linked to some of the trends in politics to do with the left-right balance and to do with the effects that this then has on the welfare state and the nature of the and the role of the market in people's lives. So we think our next step here is to try and look more at some of the mechanisms whereby these macro-level variables would play out in terms of people's individual trajectories and life courses. Thank you. Yeah, the question. Sorry. Okay, I'll just repeat. The question was around terminology and why would I use commodification and decommodification when I could instead use socialized? It's a good point, probably because I'm an academic and I have to justify my salary by using long words. But more seriously, I think you're right. The reason it's used is to show it's a kind of economics term applied to people, and that probably does have problems. We could use socialised in Britain. I'm not sure we get listened to as much as we used to, but it is trying to show the role of the market, so I think using a market terminology can help with that. Yeah. I mean, I certainly wouldn't relate to that, but I think...
all of these liberal states are all based, the DNA comes from the Elizabethan
Yeah, thank you. The sort of comment there was drawing parallels with the findings that we have by welfare state regime, with similar findings in terms of rankings for child well-being, and then also emphasising the importance of early intervention to prevent some of these trends that we see in the US. I would certainly agree with what you've said there. But I think because we're effectively analysing what's happened in the past, once we look at premature mortality that's happening now, was why we were drawing back on that period. But I think the points would be equally valid looking forward. And I certainly agree that the sort of investment strategies followed under Blair and Brown, targeting children with various interventions, including direct benefit payments, etc., should have got a health gain. And I think we just have to wait to see the data on that. Thank you for your comment. I think the question was asking about parallels with other issues around democracy and variables such as unionisation rates. I think certainly that's very important and something that we might want to think of feeding in here is these other political variables, not just left-right balance, but the kind of drivers of those, like unionisation rates and social solidarity and democratic values within a society. Yes, thank you.